Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here. I love that idea of Kremlinology applied to what's going on in Iran. We're talking about Iran all day, and we want to hear what's striking you most about the coverage. And in particular, if you want to see the photos of our guest in the last segment, Ramin Talai, freelance photojournalist who takes pictures for the New York Times and Bloomberg, they're on our website at thetakeaway.org. And also Karas Ismaili, who had some very interesting thoughts about what is going on behind the scenes in Iran. You can podcast that interview by going to iTunes or thetakeaway.org. But we want you to come up with your headline for today's news. Where are the nukes? Is that the top story, do you think, out of Iran this morning that you're not seeing in the headlines? Is it freedom for the Iranian people? Is it that the Obama administration isn't doing enough to support the people on the streets? Or do you want another headline altogether?
This is Chrissy from Miami, Florida. Yes, Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan are important, but we're not concentrating on the problem here in the USA. I've been unemployed since October. We're not making it. The United States government's forgetting about the economic problem here.
There you go. Tell us your headline. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. Another big story yesterday out of Washington. The Voting Rights Act, the government's top weapon against racial discrimination at the polls, has survived a Supreme Court challenge. The Supreme Court issued an 8-1 ruling yesterday in favor of a small Texas governing authority, a utility district, but it only narrowed the scope of the act, keeping intact its most fundamental components. Joining us now is Nate Persily, professor of law and political science at Columbia University, who has spoken with us about the Voting Rights Act and this particular case before. Professor Persily, Nate, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming back to the program. And it seems to me there are two issues here. One, the Voting Rights Act really essentially survives a deep challenge. Explain exactly what happened here.
Well, the Supreme Court blinked. Instead of deciding the sort of foundational question as to whether the Voting Rights Act is constitutional, they decided to cobble together an 8-person majority and basically decide a narrow statutory issue, which is whether this little utility district could escape from the act if it wanted to. A lot of us feared that what was likely to happen was that the Supreme Court was going to strike down the act as unconstitutional, as exceeding Congress's powers under the 14th Amendment.
And the 8-1 decision means, let's see, I'm not a court watcher like you. It seems to me that they couldn't get any sort of a consensus on the deep issue, so they're going to get an 8-1 decision on the fringe issue. Is this starting to develop into something of a legacy of the Roberts Court, in that they can't do serious issues without a divided vote, but something like this, they can get an 8-1?
It is possible that what this 8-1 ruling represents is a desire to water down the decision and to reach a broad consensus. I think there may be 5 votes to strike down the Voting Rights Act as unconstitutional. I was at the oral argument a few months ago, and even Justice Kennedy seemed very skeptical. But I think Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy may have decided, well, at least in this first case, we're going to send a warning to Congress that there are constitutional problems here, but we're not going to come out with our big hammer and strike down this act. We're going to just decide this narrow statutory issue and, you know, send a warning to Congress. There are several other cases, as you're suggesting, where Chief Justice Roberts has tried to expand the majority beyond 5 justices in controversial cases. That's true for some campaign finance cases. It's true for the Indiana voter ID case, where instead of just having a narrow 5-4 decision, and he tries to get 6 or 7 justices on his side.
You know, it seems to be one of the patterns of the Roberts Court is something that developed during the Bush administration, and that is when we were talking about military tribunals and the whole issue of Guantanamo, the pattern seemed to be the court would make a ruling, and the suggestion would be Congress needed to come up with some sort of legislation that would support what the administration was doing. And so the court would say, no, that's not quite right. Congress would come up with something. There'd be another challenge. Is that what's going on here, that the court would rather suggest that Congress modify the Voting Rights Act than actually focus on a real challenge up or down on the philosophy of the act itself?
I think they are giving Congress a second shot. But it's going to be difficult for Congress to satisfy the more conservative justices. It was quite clear that Chief Justice Roberts thinks there's something fundamentally unconstitutional about an act that singles out certain jurisdictions for coverage based on voting rights discrimination in the 1960s and 70s. So I think that Congress is going to have to come back and see whether they can loosen the strictures of the VRA. But what may happen is that they're just going to wait for the next case and should call the Supreme Court's bluff. If they're going to strike it down as unconstitutional, then they'll deal with that problem then.
All right. Then quickly, Nate, if I'm in one of those districts that is being overseen under the Voting Rights Act, which has the historical tradition of suspicious sort of patterns at the polls, how do I feel this morning? And is there a challenge coming down the pipeline that actually might allow Justice Roberts to focus in on getting a majority to do something more radical to the act?
Well, yesterday's decision will have almost no practical impact. That's because most jurisdictions were eligible to bail out from the act already, and almost none of them took advantage of it. That has to do with whether maybe it's because they thought it was too burdensome to bail out. Maybe it's because no politician really wants to take as his cause celeb the idea of getting out from under a civil rights law. And some of these jurisdictions actually preferred to be covered because it gave a federal stamp of approval to their voting changes. Now, there's all types of jurisdictions that are covered under the act. Actually, parts of New York City, for example, are covered. And they find it more or less burdensome than some other areas like Georgia and Alabama, et cetera. There will be cases in the pipeline, I think, within a year. It's clear that the opponents of the VRA would like to have the court deal with the fundamental question as soon as possible, in particular before the 2011 redistricting cycle, which is when the VRA becomes
right.
most important.
So perhaps the takeaway is no changes to the law based on yesterday's decision, but a welcome to more challenges down the pipeline over the next couple of years. Nate Persily, thanks so much, professor of law and political science at Columbia University.